This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 136. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Well, thank you, Announcer Bot, and welcome to How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just as a reminder, we have a Facebook fan page. Just go to Facebook and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. You can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, where you can leave us a review.
And you can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email, sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Finally, you can call the voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Superman, number 706, by Wilson and Finna.
What? What happened to Straczynski? Sorry.
Yeah, looks like that whole thing is falling apart. They already seem to be, no pun intended, walking away from grounded. Straczynski, for those who haven't heard, is because of the huge success of Superman Earth 1, he's going to now do larger works like graphic novels, and they're taking him off of regular books.
Well, and in a way, that seems more suited to his kind of strengths, doesn't
it? Yeah.
Because, as you said when we first started talking about this, he tends to work for a little while on a project and seem to get tired of it. So giving him finite projects makes more sense.
Absolutely. So they do bring up some interesting points, some of which have never really been covered that I'm aware of in the Superman continuity. The first one they have talked about before is how the Daily Planet is doing versus blogs. I mean, there was a storyline several years ago where LexCorp takes over the Daily Planet and tries to turn it into an online type magazine. But in this case, we're now back to the traditional Daily Planet, and Perry pretty much seems completely out of touch with what is going on.
Yeah, it's like he hardly knows what a blog is, which I find unrealistic for a magazine editor.
Yeah, he refers to it as a blob at one point. Most of the storyline is about how this one blog is out there saying, well, the Daily Planet has some sort of special relationship with Superman. They're paying him off because clearly they get all the exclusives, and why? And so how do they get those exclusives? And what is the relationship between Superman and Lois, especially now that Lois is to the rest of the world is married to Clark?
Yes.
The fact is, you probably see Superman and Lois together more often than you see Lois and Clark together.
That's true.
So it all comes down to this photograph they have where they see Superman and Lois in an embrace, where it turns out to actually be a Photoshop thing from some party.
Right.
Superman himself really only has a cameo in this issue. He kind of literally flies in for like a page and a half and then disappears. So it's really a Perry White story more than anything.
Now, in the end, Perry White offers this blogger a summer internship. But I think he'd probably be making more and getting more headlines from his blog than he would from an internship at the Daily Planet.
Yeah, this is definitely a bias toward traditional media.
Indeed.
Which is what DC is. You know, DC's in the position of trying to get into the online space, but what they know is the traditional paper. So definitely it's biased in that direction. Green Lantern number 60 by Johns and Mankey.
It almost seemed like they had a recap in this.
There was definitely some repeating of things that had already gone on.
Like, maybe they just realized that people are getting tired of the story and aren't paying attention, so they have to, like, give us a page and a half to tell us what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So Flash is still possessed by Parallax, and Hal tries to trick Parallax to take him over instead. But this mysterious figure that we've been seeing for the last few issues, this guy swathed in bandages, arrives, and he absorbs Parallax and the other entities that are on Earth.
Who just all kind of happened to show up? Is that?
Well, because the other entity's host bodies came in to try to attack this guy, and instead he just takes the he just takes the entities and just absorbs them. So who is the mysterious figure? We find out it's Krona. Now,
oh my gosh!
Now,
it's Krona.
It's Krona.
Okay.
So who the heck is Krona?
I don't know.
Well, he first appeared in original series Green Lantern number 40, 1965. He's this Malthusian scientist from essentially near the beginning of time, when life on Earth was bacterial, and that was about it. This very early race becomes incredibly technologically advanced, and he creates this temporal viewer because he wants to see what happened at the beginning of time. He wants to see, essentially, the Big Bang. He was warned that this would cause a huge calamity if he actually ever did so by the other scientists. And he ends up seeing what they show in the picture, but they never really explain. And you see a callback to that in the last page of this issue, where he sees the viewer and he sees what is essentially the hand of God creating the universe. Well, the viewer explodes, and when that happens, this is when the multiverse is created. Probably one of the most significant events in the DC history is this is when the multiverse is created. Until then, there was only one universe.
But it wasn't very old.
No, it wasn't very old at that time.
Yes.
So Krona is banished as energy by the other Malthusians, and they feel so responsible about this and how much havoc has been created by the creation of the multiverse that they relocate to Oa and become the Guardians. They're the guardians of the universe. This is their origin story. And they do this to basically restore order. They decided it's their duty now to restore order to what is now the multiverse. And that's how the Guardians get started. How Krona's come back a couple times. He's fought, I think, the JLA at least twice. So now he's back as this figure who's apparently insane. And we really don't know his motives for what he's doing. So I was hoping to see something a little more different for the mysterious figure than Krona, but oh well. Moving on to Batman and Robin number 18 by Cornell, McDaniel, and Jones. So this is the origin of the absence in the long tradition of mishapen villains just spawn from Gotham City all the time.
Yes.
This billionaireess who was with Bruce at one point and they were dating, she's attacked on her yacht by these robbers, one of whom blows a hole in her head, and she falls in the water, and she's assumed dead because there was a hole in her head. But somehow the pollution from the river, doesn't really explain how, saves her. But the bigger question is, how does she actually survive with a hole in her head?
Exactly.
Well, there's a reference to Dandy Walker syndrome, which I looked up. It's a real condition.
I was wondering about that, but yeah. I didn't bother looking
it up. I looked it up on Wikipedia, so... and it looked pretty official, where part of your brain is missing at birth. It's a congenital defect.
Maybe DC just put that entry in Wikipedia.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, I never know. But based on the Wikipedia article, it's like part of your brain is gone. Like maybe a small part of your brain never really forms. I don't see how you would survive what is essentially a softball-sized space in your head.
Well, and... the thing is that her head is shaped differently than it was when she was alive,
mm-hmm.
Before she was shot.
Right.
It's more like her head expanded to give this whole room. To me, it would make much more sense if it was a smaller hole.
Yeah.
But maybe it's like, you know, those people who pierce their ears and make the hole bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger with little inserts. Maybe she's been doing that to her bullet hole in her head.
Yeah. It's like, did the guy fire like a bazooka at her? I mean, it's like, it seems like an awfully large space that a bullet did. Somehow, the extra blood flow that's involved increases her intelligence. There's a lot of, going on with this origin.
I'm not quite sure why there would be extra blood flow.
Yeah, but that's what they say in here.
I know.
It's one of those, it's comics, you just have to go with it and go, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. So she now wants revenge on Bruce for dumping her. And, you know, that he never really cared for her, she feels. And so she's going around and attacking all the other girlfriends. And so the next person she's attacking is Vicky Vale.
Yeah, she has a bag full of girlfriends' body parts.
Yeah. Which it, and you know that because it actually says it on.
Exactly.
Where do you get those made? Those kind of, does she make it herself? Is some sort of thing on Etsy? How do you get
that would be something for my Etsy store. Girlfriend's body parts bags.
Yeah. Hmm. This seems strange to be actually labeling it. Finally, we have Mighty Crusaders, number 6 of 6, by Troutman, Jerwa, Lopez, and Rodriguez. So this is the end of the whole Red Circle experiment, where DC said, oh, we have licensed the rights to what were the Archie superheroes. And they actually bought the rights years ago, to the point where they had tried this before in a imprint called Impact, that they wanted to have something that maybe younger readers, not necessarily kids, but younger readers and readers who hadn't read DC stuff before could get into, because you didn't have to know the whole DC continuity.
Right.
And this actually ends up in a similar fashion to how Impact ended, where it's a team book that is created as a miniseries. It was called Crucible then, but in this case, it's Mighty Crusaders. But it's the same concept, where all the heroes come together and fight some battle as a team. Really kind of more of a whimper than a bang. I think there were just too many other things going on at DC. You have First Wave, which is also not doing well.
Is it? Right now, you're only getting one of the First Wave titles,
right? There's a Spirit title still coming out, and there's a Doc Savage title coming out. I haven't been very impressed with it overall. It was an intriguing concept, the idea of a separate world where nobody has any superpowers, and it's just adventurers going around, and they took all these pulp heroes and tried to put them together. Interesting concept, really hasn't coalesced very well. First Wave, I'm kind of like, okay, let's finish this up. It's a miniseries, and let's just wrap her up. So we had First Wave going on. We had the Blackest Night, Brightest Day stuff going on. You had the thing with Milestone and Wildstorm having to kind of resolve them as well. It just seemed like DC was kind of flailing around, just trying to do so many different things that people just don't have the time or the money to invest in all of them.
And at the same time all of this was going on, there was all this stuff going on with their sort of infrastructure and management things.
Right.
And I think a lot of the stuff may have gotten neglected in these shuffles.
I suspect you're right. They didn't want to integrate these characters into the DCU. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. did to some extent, but the other ones really were trying as much as possible. They said they're part of DCU, but you didn't see a lot of guest stars. I kind of did like that S.H.I.E.L.D. series. The web series was okay. I think, again, it was just too many things going on at once and trying to get people to buy into all this stuff all at once. Something had to lose. And unfortunately, it seems like a lot of things lost. That the First Wave thing really didn't go anywhere. They're now doing this Thunder Agents thing, which seems, you know, intriguing. But for this title that's been in gestation for so many years, I'm not as impressed with it as I would like to be.
Yes.
Okay, before we get out of here, I think it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? I'm waving it at Mark so he can see how big and fat it is.
It's big and fat. Okay.
Okay. Go.
TV related?
Sort of.
Movie related?
Sort of.
So it's some sort of list?
Yes.
Okay. So it's the year end. Didn't they already do the Entertainers of the Year issue?
They did.
Okay, so it's not that. These are, it's a list, it has have to do with financials?
No.
Okay, so it's not like the most, is it the most powerful people for the year?
No.
Okay. And it's, is it more, okay, is it actors?
Mostly, yes.
Mostly. It's not like, it's not a list of fictional characters.
That's correct.
Okay. Are there any executives involved in the list?
There may be.
But certainly not on the cover.
Yes.
Okay. Is it like a list of 100?
No.
50?
No.
40?
No.
30?
No.
20?
No.
10?
Yes.
Okay.
But 10 of more than one thing.
10 of more than one thing. 10 of more than one thing. So it's 10 lists? 10 of more.
All right, I'm going to tell you what the theme is so that you don't spend the last 45 seconds
yes.
on that. It's the best and worst of 2010.
Oh, that one. Okay. So best and worst of 2010.
And there's like 100 people on the cover. So guess people. Guess at least 10.
Neil Patrick Harris. Angelina Jolie.
Yes, I think Angelina. There she is.
The cast of Glee.
At least one person from Glee, yes.
Let's see. It's Bristol Palin from Dancing with the Stars.
So.
Somebody from Dancing with the Stars. Probably not.
I don't see a Dancing with the Stars person.
Okay.
There you go.
Oh, well. Well, I wasn't going to be able to guess all 100 anyway.
No, but boy, you know. I don't know. These covers are always hard.
Yeah.
Modern Family.
I was just about to say Modern Family.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Conan.
Mm-hmm.
Betty White.
Mm-hmm.
Courtney Cox, Taylor Lautner, Lady Gaga, Tina Fey, Toy Story, Karate Kid, Rapunzel.
Random things in 2010.
Taylor Swift. I guess when you do best and worst, you can put practically anything.
Anybody, yeah. Oh, well. I want to tell you, first off, there will be no show next week.
Nope.
Happy holidays. And remind you about that Facebook fan page. Search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. Go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, and please leave us a review.
You can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, or call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm going to go take a nap.
Okay. Bye-bye.